Hello and welcome everyone. This is Dr. Rita Marie Loscalzo and we're here for our monthly Institute of Nutritional Endocrinology open Q&A call. So this is where you get to just come and ask me questions about whatever's on your mind. That could be something related to a client that you're working with and you have need some advice. It could be related to materials in the program. It could be anything at all, really. It's just an open Q&A. So I'm here with you for as long as we need to be here. We have it scheduled for an hour. Sometimes it goes a little bit longer, but it could also go a little bit shorter. So it's totally up to you. So the way that you ask me questions is to raise your hand with the star 2 if you're on the phone, and then I'll open up your phone line and we'll chat. And if you're on the web, just go ahead and type your question into the Q&A box. And it looks like Ghislaine has her hand up, so we're going to open up Ghislaine's line. Hi there, Ghislaine.
Oh, hi, Dr. Rita Marie. So do you hear me well?
I hear you just fine, yeah.
Okay, so there's a woman who is in my accountability team, and she has problem with her digestive system. And I would say a digestive system, I find it very hard to work with people who cannot digest this and that. I find it hard to work with them. Maybe they don't have enough hydrochloric acid or I don't know, but this woman, she did a fast and she went better after. Then she went to eat at a restaurant, a salad bar, and she got violently ill, she spent the night with diarrhea or cramps and in pain and for a few days. And she seems to have a sensitive digestive system, and everybody at the table, they didn't have any digestive problem from what they ate. So I suggested that she try FODMAP, you know, F-O-D-M-A-P-S. Maybe there's some food irritate her. Maybe she has a bacterial overgrowth. I don't know. But she seems to get into problems here and there in her digestion. So what do you think about FODMAP? Maybe some fruit or vegetables might be might ferment more for her. I don't know.
Yeah, there's a lot of possibilities here, Ghislaine. So the first thing I would say is if she did a fast and then she very soon after breaking the fast went out to lunch or dinner at a restaurant, is that what happened? Was she... Or had she already introduced foods back?
The fast was, I think, 2 to 3 weeks ago. And then in the weekend, she went with family, you know, in a restaurant. So, yeah, so
okay.
The fast was a while ago.
It was a while ago, so and this just happened recently. Okay, so if she's been eating okay, the food that she's been preparing up until now,
but
right.
She told me last week she spent many days at the hospital with her aunt, who was sick. So she was eating like green powder and things like that, and in hemp protein powder. And she said she was feeling fine. Her digestion was fine. She was okay until this happened.
Okay. So I wouldn't necessarily jump right to the conclusion that there's certain foods in the whole FODMAP thing, because that can get really messy. So, but in any case, whether it's, you know, specific fermentables that are causing her a problem, whether it's that she has an irritated digestive tract lining and heavy duty raw stuff caused her a problem, or whether it be that perhaps because she is so much healthier than probably the rest of the people in her family eating at the table, maybe there was some contamination on the salad bar. Because, you know, those things sit out. And people are breathing on. You know, it's not the most sanitary conditions of all. So I would step back a step. And once she's stabilized and the diarrhea's calmed down, then I would very slowly be introducing foods and very simple meals. So instead of having a big meal, because you tend to have really complicated meals when you do a salad bar. You have a little of this and a little of that. And then next thing you know, there's 5 or 10 different ingredients on your plate. So I would, in order to be able to identify this, I would step back a little bit and go to, okay, what's a good basis? What are some of the foods that she knows she handles just fine? As a basis, like you said, she had hemp seeds, so those would be good, right? She could start with making some steamed vegetables just to see if it's an irritation to her lining that needs to be taken care of. Because some people, as much as we like to get them to eat a lot of raw food, some people can't handle it because their digestive tract is inflamed. So you might just have her pick, you know, have a meal of some lightly steamed zucchini and green beans with some hemp seeds sprinkled on it and see how she digests that. And then maybe go to adding, I don't know, some romaine lettuce and see how she does that. But just gradually build it up so that she's just introducing a new food or two at a time to see what happens with her digestion.
Yeah, okay, that makes sense. So That's what I told her, to eat light for a few days and try to steam her vegetables, because she might not digest raw food, and blend it and chew very well.
Right. So, all very good advice. Very good advice. You know, dealing with food intolerances becomes, you know, it's challenging. Like you said, you find it hard to work with people with that. And the reason is, that because in order to really get to the heart of it and understand it, it takes stepping back and reducing the variety of what people are eating. And it becomes challenging because people are like, well, I'm starving. What am I going to eat? How am I going to do all this? But on the other hand, it can be very helpful, and you don't have to limit the quantity per se. So if you have something that has some depth and calories to it, like if she tolerates hemp seeds, you can always have her make a little hemp seed ranch dressing where she just throws some hemp seeds in the blender with some water, you know, and puts a little bit of salt on it. I mean, it's not really a ranch dressing, but it's just a simple thing, or some lemon in there. And then she puts that over her veggies to give it some extra calories and some fat. And so she's not feeling like, oh, I can't do this because it's too hard. I don't have enough calories and, you know, fat to sustain me. But on the other hand, you know, getting back to your question about the whole FODMAPs, and that's fermentable oligosaccharides and disaccharides. Is that what it stands for? I always forget what it actually means. But it's particular carbohydrates that are fermentable, and in some folks with particular overgrowths, typically in their digestive tract, they don't tolerate it. And it's not something for the faint of heart to just do, because they eliminate a lot of really good foods. And it's not something that everybody needs to do, but it is something that you might look at. Like, what are the particular foods or the groups of foods that might need to be checked out, like eliminated from somebody for a while and then put back in? So those tend to be the FODMAPs, and you can just do a Google search on FODMAPs if you're not familiar with it. And then it's the other piece is oxalates. Some people find that when they eat a lot of what's supposedly good, healthy food, like extra veggies and kale and spinach and broccoli and things like that, is that they may get some irritation and not tolerate it well if they have an oxalate sensitivity. Another thing it might be is the whole thing with the GAPS diet, and that's similar to the FODMAPs, but definitely different. And the GAPS has to do with particular things that are irritating to particular people's digestion. I've looked at the GAPS diet and read some of the things that the woman who wrote it, and it kind of turns me off in a sense. I think a lot of people get good results from doing it to an extent, but she kind of is like almost anti-plant foods, that she thinks people should be eating almost exclusively animal foods, and that the only plant foods people should ever eat are those that are fermented. And so you get into a lot of, I don't know, I think you get into a little bit of dogma with that, and I think it's really a matter of going back to what our job is to figure out for people where their constraints lie, where their intolerances lie, work with them to restore integrity to their digestive tract so they don't have to be so concerned about eliminating particular groups of foods, you know, with the exception of the junky stuff like hydrogenated oils and, you know, refined grains and all that. So does that help at all?
Yes, absolutely. I just got into FODMAP this weekend because I'm going to have a retreat, but that's not my retreat, that somebody hired me to be the raffle chef there for the weekend. And one woman just said, oh, I have Crohn's disease, I cannot eat this, that, like anything I was making. So she said, I eat the food on the FODMAP, and she said, I feel good doing that.
Mm.
So, yes, that's good. So I was looking into that, what you can eat, what you cannot eat, and I say, oh, okay, some people cannot eat that because they have some bacterial overgrowth
right.
and all that. So,
right.
So at the retreat that happened tomorrow, I start tomorrow, but I said, but I cannot help you very much because all the food I'm making is something you cannot eat. But I want to talk to her into healing her Crohn's disease and maybe work with her and have her as a client. So,
And this could be a place
said,
to start, right? You take away the irritation. So you start here and then you work with her on healing. And with Crohn's, I believe it's super important to have a liquid or blended diet for a while and to stay away from a lot of the raw stuff for about a month. And I've been able to help people do that, and they'll do juices, right? You can do vegetable juice.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And that's very healing and soothing, but it doesn't require that the fiber that'll aggravate when you're in an active state of Crohn's disease. But I'm looking at the FODMAP list. There's a fair amount of stuff that you could include if you're doing there's almond milk and nut butters, various nuts and nut butters. I'm not sure which ones, but they list as all of them are listed. I mean, they list as stuff you can eat. Get this, Cheerios, noodles, pancakes. You know, it's like, are these really healthy food? Excuse me?
Yeah.
Right? But that's what they list as okay because they don't have these full fermentable oligosaccharides. So for those of you who are not familiar, it's the FODMAP diet is fermentable oligo dimonosaccharides and polyols. So there's these particular kinds of carbohydrates that are found in foods, and not all of them are fermentable in this way. And for most of us, ferment is good, right? Fermentable is like, wow, we want our bodies, we want to eat foods that are fermented, but when you have a bad overgrowth in the gut and your body ferments it or these bacteria ferment it, it can produce some really bad side effects. But, you know, you can, I'm looking at what's available, like in terms of, there's quite a number of fruits that are available, surprisingly. Bananas, berries, cantaloupe, grapes, grapefruit, honeydew, kiwi, kumquat, lemon, lime. So you've got a bunch of fruits that are available. Vegetables are a little bit more limited, but there's still stuff like bell peppers, bok choy, bamboo shoots, cucumbers, carrots, celery, corn, which I don't know that's necessarily good for somebody with Crohn's, eggplant, lettuce, leafy greens. So it's not as restrictive as something like this specific carbohydrate diet, although there are some similarities. What you get into trouble with people is when you're not sure and they're wanting to try, well, I did the FODMAPs, I want to do the low histamine diet, I want to do the low oxalate diet, I want to do the specific carbohydrate diet. And when you look at the overlap of what you can eat between all those diets, they're down to very, very, very few foods. So our job is to really help them to make sense of it and not go crazy with all the stress associated with, I can't eat this, I can't eat that, and help them to figure out what they can eat.
Yes. So that's, I'm going to try to have her as a client and help her with her Crohn's. And she was going to bring chicken and eggs and all that. So I don't think it's very healthy food to heal anyway because they don't have much nutrition in them. But if I work with her, that would be more into, like you said, blended
then you can help her,
and
yeah.
juices and more vegetables in her diet and, upgrade her diet for sure.
Right. But Crohn's responds super well when you can do a period of juice cleansing or at least blended cooked vegetables for a while. So that way they get a lot of nutrition there, but they also it's very soothing and healing to the digestive lining.
Yeah, cooked because they cannot digest too much raw fiber.
No. In fact, at the beginning you shouldn't, because I've had people where I've taken them off all of that. I put them on the juices and the cooked everything pureed, and going from just bleeding profusely every day to barely every now and then seeing a little drop of pink. So it really does heal. But when they go back and they start to introduce some of the harder stuff, or they don't chew the food well, that's the biggest thing, right? None of us chew our food real well. We're always in a hurry.
Mm-hmm.
And it's especially important with Crohn's or ulcerative colitis, because you've got this raw digestive lining. It's irritated, it's open, it's wounded. And when you don't chew the foods, it's like rubbing sandpaper over that.
Mm-hmm.
And you need to give it a chance to heal. The good news is that the digestive tract lining can heal relatively quickly.
Yes. And what about the bacteria? Do they become better as they eat well? Do they?
The probiotics, right, fermented foods, whereas maybe not sauerkraut early on unless you blend the sauerkraut, but sauerkraut juice could be very helpful. You can make fermented vegetables. I'm going to go through a lot of that on the Vital Healing Kitchen on Saturday. We're going to do all the stuff about fermented stuff. And I didn't want to just do the same old, same old. So we're going to be doing some fun stuff. Things like kefir could be very helpful, coconut milk, coconut water kefir, where you make that in fermented.
Oh, you know what? I tried that, and it became very thick. Is it how it turns?
Well, the kefir, if you just use the coconut water, generally doesn't get thick. It stays liquid. But if you blend the flesh of the coconut with it, it comes out more like a yogurt.
Now, I tried it with kefir and it became thick. So I guess I have to try again because it was ugly.
And you did it with the water?
It was just the water.
Just the water? Interesting.
Yes.
Yeah. I've never seen that happen. Any times I've made it, it was always very thin. And it's just a nice little, fermented drink. So.
Oh, really? Oh, really? It became like gelatinous, like a gel.
Interesting. Yeah.
Yes.
I don't know.
Okay.
Maybe
you had
bits of flesh in there. Who knows?
Okay, so are we still on for next June? You said that I will do something in the kitchen?
Yeah. When you just tell me when you're ready to do it, and we'll do it.
June.
Oh, June.
June.
Oh, June. Yeah, we can do that. June, our topic in June is nutritional ABCs. So it's our alphabet soup. So it's really just focusing on getting a lot of vitamins and minerals in the food. So it's easy.
Okay.
That's easy. Yeah, let's chat. Let's have a conversation about what recipes you want to show or what recipe.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
We should practice it in advance to make sure the technology works to be able to film from your kitchen.
Yes, exactly.
Which it should work. I've played with it, but, it's a matter of just testing it out. Great. Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
Okay, so thank you very much.
Thank you. You're so welcome, Ghislaine. Okay. So if anybody is on the line live, hopefully you learned a lot from that. That was a great question that Ghislaine brought up, and you really sparked a lot of conversation about gut health. If you're on the phone and you want to ask a question, raise your hand, and we'll put Ghislaine's hand down, and then raise your hand and go ahead and go for it. We have Tony, and then I saw a question from, I think it was, let me see who it was from, Rukmini, and we'll go to that one next. So let's go to Tony. Hi, Tony.
Hey there. Hello, Dr. Rita Marie. How are you?
Great. How are you?
I'm wonderful. I'm going to stay in the lane of digestion.
Okay.
So since we're on that, I have a client who filled out a health questionnaire for me, and based on that, I asked her to fill out some additional ones, one being the body organ assessment and the adrenals. And I realized that her adrenals are challenged. She's taking Lexapro for 10 years, mind you.
Mm.
But I also see that she's got some digestive issues. And I know that's just kind of like a snapshot. It doesn't really tell us what is going on. Should I recommend that she have a lab test to determine what's going on? I suspect she has low stomach acid, you know, all the other things related to people who don't digest. Or should I just start developing protocols knowing that's probably what the case may be?
Yeah, you know, that's an interesting question because it comes up a lot. I don't do a lot of digestive testing, quite frankly,
okay.
You know, lab testing,
okay.
Because it's expensive,
yeah.
And people don't like doing stool tests because that's what's usually related.
I can't imagine why not.
It's like, okay, well, we got to collect my poop, and then I have to play with it with sticks and mix it up and then put it. I mean, if you're 4 years old, you love it. But you're a fully grown adult, you kind of shy away from it. So I don't do them a lot. But I use that the questionnaire as a guideline, right? So if it looks like there's a lot of questions she's answered positively related to stomach acid, a great place to start. So like everything else, we always go back to the basics,
yeah.
Right? I was talking to somebody, a practitioner, the other day on the phone, and she was saying she got this questionnaire in, and you know she's like, oh, I've never dealt with it. Interstitial cystitis or whatever it was that the person was dealing with. And I'm like, whoa, wait, let's just stop. Let's just not get into the mode of correcting a diagnosed condition. Let's get into the mode of looking at her basics. Well, so I said, look at her diet. She's still on gluten. She's still on caffeine. She's still on all these things that are irritants. Let's go back to the basics. So the first thing I would do would be to look at her diet and say, what kind of things are disrupting her gut, right? So if she's eating refined foods, if she's on gluten, that's a place to start to help her get off of that. But if she does show signs of low stomach acid, then I see no problem with talking to her about doing bitters because that's a real easy way to do it. You know, bitters and zinc. I always do bitters and zinc hand in hand because the bitters will help stimulate your body to produce more secretions in the digestive tract. But if you don't have enough zinc, you just can't make enough stomach acid. So, and if you don't have enough stomach acid, you can't absorb zinc. So that's a situation where I would jump right in and put in some zinc into the system. You know, liquid ionized zinc would be my favorite form. And look at a bitters formula, like the Herbalist and Alchemist one that we had David Winston, who spoke to us a couple months ago about adaptogens and all. His company makes an awesome bitters, and I keep it by my desk so that if I am eating a big, you know, heavy duty meal, I just take a couple of squirts of this stuff before I start. So I would have her do some bitters and do some digestive enzymes if you think that would be called for. And then, because you can get some really good results pretty quickly by doing that. And then they feel like, okay, what's next? Okay, I'm willing to do what's next. So looking at the digestive tract as the basics being, you know, some things to stimulate the secretions, and the bitters will stimulate not just HCL secretion, but it'll also stimulate bile secretions, so it helps with that digestion too. It just tends to lubricate the entire digestive tract and increase secretions. So you could start with the bitters and the zinc. You can look at digestive enzymes if she's willing to take them with meals, and then you can look at probiotics or probiotic foods, right?
Yeah.
Depending on how motivated they are, a lot of them aren't motivated to make their own probiotic foods. So fortunately, in our today's modern world here, there's just a lot of brands out there of nice cultured foods. It's kind of become the chic thing. Gluten-free and probiotics in food, it tends to be, you know, the thing of the day. So if you can get her doing some of those basics, talk to her about chewing, because if she has adrenal stuff going on, she's probably bolting her food down, right? She's busy, she's working, So yeah. I would talk to her about slowing down, doing a couple of breaths and appreciation before she eats, but that can tremendously improve her digestion.
That's amazing. Now, what about the Lexapro that she's been on for 10 years? And surprisingly enough, when we did the assessment, she told me the top five things she wanted to improve on, or she wanted to handle, that wasn't one of her chief complaints. It was more or less, I want to look good. But she's been on this Lexapro and doesn't have a problem with that. Will that affect her digestion in any way? I know it affects her liver, I'm sure.
Oh, it definitely would affect the liver. Would it affect directly? You know, the way that you do that, if you do, it's so easy to find these things these days. If I look up Lexapro and you just do a Google search on it, you can usually get like something like drugs.com or one of those will usually have the complete description. And then it'll show side effects. So this is drug. I'm looking on drugs.com. How should I take it? Side effects. So report any worsening, rigid, stiff muscles, high fever, sweating, nausea or vomiting, diarrhea. So that says, well, it could affect the digestive tract, right?
Okay.
You know, racing thoughts, headache. I mean, so whenever you look up the side effects of a particular medication, and I highly recommend that all of you do that. If you're doing an intake on somebody and you find they're on meds, go look them up. And like I said, now, you used to have the big PDR on your desk, and then every year you had to get a new one because the new drugs were coming out. So the Internet has made this so easy. There's a number of sites that are official kind of sites that have the listing, and you can say, hey, you know what I understand is, and you can make the connection for her. Now, are you going to take her off of it? No. Are you going to suggest she go off of it? No. What you're going to do is say you're on these medications, and these are the known side effects and nutrient interactions. Sometimes you could just, like, if I type Lexapro and I type next to it nutrient interaction, you may find a site that 'll talk about drug interactions. Here's one, Vitamin ERB University, something I chart, focuses on a class of drugs that can deplete the body of nutrients. So you look up the drug class, and it even has herbs, it has minerals, it has supplements, it has vitamins.
Wow.
And it talks about the different kinds of drugs. It's probably not huge. Drug classes. It has a whole bunch of drug classes. Let's see. It shows acid. Oh, yeah. It's not the best organized, but you can also search. So this is at vitaminherbuniversity.com.
Vitaminherbuniversity.com. Okay.
Yep, and then they have some charts. And so if I look up, okay, let me look at the categories of antidepressants. Let's see. Maybe this isn't telling me what I...
Well, I can certainly, you know, play with that later on.
Yeah, but play with that and look it up, because whenever you look at somebody who's on drugs, this might not be the best site, but there's others, I'm sure, where you can find, and you just always want to look up the side effects and the nutrient interactions. And then you can say, look, like, I'll give you a good example, is birth control pills. Somebody's on birth control pills, watch out. That is messing with their nutrition big time. Number one, it's disrupting their gut flora. But number two, it's also affecting a number of nutrients, vitamin C, vitamin B6, a couple of the other B vitamins, calcium. Mm. And so if you know, hey, you're on these drugs, and I'm not going to talk to you about getting off your drugs because that's something between you and your doctor. It is possible that as we help you balance your nutrition that you'll need less and you can work with your doctor to go off or reduce. But in the meantime, we know that this particular drug that you're on affects your absorption of this, and this nutrient. So we have to make sure that you're getting really concentrated amounts of those to make up for that. Right?
I like that. Thank you.
Wow. You're welcome.
That's very helpful.
Yeah. Yeah, good. Right, and that sets you apart from all the other health coaches that are out there just, you know, talking to them about probiotics.
Right. I like that. Thank you.
You're welcome. You're welcome. Anything else I can help you with?
I'm going to let somebody else ask the question, and I'll do the next round.
Okay.
Because I always have questions.
Okay. Well, let's see who else has a question, and then we'll come back to you.
Okay.
Okay, so anybody else with a question, raise your hand. Star 2 raises your hand, and then I'll go to the, I know Rukmini put one in. Rukmini says, one of my clients has fibroids and had her uterus removed 2 years ago. Since then, she's been going through early menopause, and she has also had high blood pressure readings of 140 over 90. She says she gets a lot of heart palpitations. When she hears any sad news or even mildly sad news, she's by nature a happy person, but since surgery, she gets stressed very easily. Finally, she has gallbladder stones. Woo. The main reason she came to me was to help her with her headaches. She says since her surgery, she's been having headaches on the top of her head, and she can't even dye her hair. It feels like it's a balloon, and after meals, it gets worse. It's constantly there, and she wants to know what to do. I'd recommended green juicing at least twice a day, and I would get back to her. I'm thinking of asking her to take some omega-3 supplements since her diet consists of meat and not much raw foods. What can I advise her to do about her headaches and the rest as well? About 2 months ago, she decided to get herself off BP medication without consulting doctors as well, but feels okay without any noticeable change. Okay, so a few things here. And so what I'm going to be doing is giving you more questions then I will answers, because that's our key to success, is really knowing what questions to ask. And the more you learn as we progress through the program, the more you're going to get, you're going to have this plethora of questions that you'll get to choose from, because you'll understand what's going on. So first of all, if she has a blood pressure of 140 over 90, and that's after she's gone off of her blood pressure medication, that's a pretty good sign, because it says that she was probably over-medicated, and we could get back to that. Now, but make sure she is testing her blood pressure, because if she started getting headaches after going off the blood pressure medication, it could be that the blood pressure is actually going high. So I would have her take her blood pressure when she's having a headache and see what's going on there. Okay, so it's like, and you need to always tell people when they decide to go off medication, just remind them that that's something they should be working closely with their doctor on. Okay, so surgery. Surgery is a stress on the system. You're cutting into somebody. Your body perceives it as not only is there a tiger chasing you, but the tiger caught you and bit you, right? It's like cutting. It's invasive. So the adrenals come into play here. And if she's already had some stress in her life to begin with, which most people when they get to perimenopause and they're having problems that cause them to have to go through that and get their uterus removed, there's been some hormonal imbalance. Generally, when there's been some reproductive hormone imbalance, it's been preceded by many years of adrenal imbalance. Then that contributes, remember, to that cascade. We briefly talked about it, and we'll get way more into it as we go through. But we talked about how there's a master hormone, pregnenolone, which is a precursor to the adrenal hormones, but also to the reproductive. And usually when the reproductive hormones go awry, it's because they're depleted and they're not able to make enough of the precursor because your body's using it towards the stress. So if she was in a stressful situation before she had surgery, it's a big stress, and nobody's looked at her adrenals. So I would be big time looking at her adrenals, okay? Now, you want to help her, though, with the headaches, because that's the big deal, right? That's the first thing that she's complaining about. And she says, especially after meals, it's worse. So again, like I said earlier to both Ghislaine and to Tony, is that we always have to go back and look at the basics. So when you're trying to figure out why this person has a headache, look at what they're eating. Like she says, it's worse after eating. Well, what is she eating? Does she have, like a lot of people do, a very standard meal that you just eat over and over again? Or are there foods that they're eating at each meal? Is she gluten-free? If you're if you have gluten intolerance and then you have an additional stress to the adrenals, it's going to throw you into more symptomatology. So the things that you want to look at when there's headaches is, number one, how's her digestion, especially if they get worse after she eats. Something may be wrong with her digestion. It may not even be a food intolerance per se. It could be just that her digestion's all screwed up. And so she's producing a lot of metabolic waste products from digestion, from poor digestion, that get into her bloodstream and aggravate her head. So first thing, make sure the blood pressure is okay. Look at that blood pressure and make sure that the headaches aren't coming from her going off her medication and now her blood pressure is too high. Okay? Sounds, though, like the headaches preceded the blood pressure changes. So that's probably not it, but I always have to say that because it's a critical piece that you guys may have to make sure that you do. Somebody has headaches, they tell you about blood pressure medication, always have to rule out that it's not related. Okay, then look at the digestion. If she's not digesting well, if she's producing some fermentable byproducts, if she doesn't have the right probiotics, and she's got an overgrowth, and after she eats, what if she's eating sweet foods? And it's feeding an overgrowth of candida or other kinds of organisms in the gut, right? I would ask, was she on antibiotics? Because typically when somebody has surgery, regardless of what they have surgery for, post-op is putting them on antibiotics. I know that for a fact because when I had my arm surgery, when I hurt my or broke my arm last year, they wanted to put me on antibiotics. They said that's routine, and I had to sign something away that said I was willing to take the risk of not having antibiotics in my IV. So if she's taken antibiotics and then never replenished her good gut flora or didn't adequately replenish her good gut flora, that could be creating a problem in the digestive tract. Okay? So there's a lot here that you could be looking at. Always okay to do omega-3 supplements, especially if she's eating a lot of meat. Meat tends to be high in a fatty acid called arachidonic acid, which is an omega-6 that tends to be problematic in terms of inflammation. So, again, if she had low omega-3 status when she had this surgery, it might just throw her over the edge, and now her body can't deal with the inflammation. So there's a lot of possibilities here. And if you're on the call, Rukmini, go ahead and give me some feedback answers to some of those questions, and we can chat about it some more. Let me see if anybody else put in. Okay, so Rukmini asked one more question. Okay, this is related to something different. A relative's son has recently been diagnosed for hypothyroid, 12 years old. Holy cow. Wow. T3.31, T4.9, those are very low numbers. TSH 150. As I see it, he has some major problem converting TSH to T4. And his anti-TPO antibody is greater than 1,300. Okay, it is Hashimoto's, because if his TPO is greater than 1,300, that is Hashimoto's. And if his, oh my God, his white blood cell is kind of high too at 9890. They're ready to make any changes to their diet and get off the medications. I've currently asked him to take at least 3 Brazilmuts a day, ordered some varieties of sea vegetables. I've also shared some information from your thyroid presentation, but what else can I advise? Well, first of all, he's got to get off of gluten. 100% off of gluten. He's got to get off of any other food allergens that are related, so I would get him off the top 6 plus sugar. So gluten, dairy, corn, soy, eggs, and peanuts. Gluten, dairy, corn, soy, eggs, and peanuts, and sugar, of course, off all refined foods. Oftentimes it's something going on with the gut. You don't see numbers like that unless there's a raging, this is a really serious autoimmune condition to have TSH that high and those T4 and T3 so low. I would make sure they do an ultrasound to see if he has nodules or any other kind of growth on there. But it really does sound like with TPO greater than 1,300, he's got Hashimoto's big time, and we got to address that immune system. So going back, to some of the stuff I've already given you on thyroid, going to the stuff from Shine, and you weren't at Shine, Rukmini, but if you go to the Shine video page, I'm pretty sure that the handouts for it are up there, and there's a chart that shows a lot of the therapeutics that you can do with the thyroid. You kind of look up where their labs are, and you look through some of the therapeutics. So antioxidants are going to be really important, things like glutathione. There's a cream that's, I don't know if it's available over where you live, but it's by Apex Energetics called OxyCell. But things that help the body produce more glutathione, so I would look that up. The selenium is good for Brazil nuts, but in this case, it's not going to do, it's going to help because it helps with autoimmune, but it's not going to help so much with the conversion because there's nothing to convert. The serum T4, and I'm assuming you mean the total T4, is 0.9. I don't think I've ever seen anything that low. So I would be looking at sources of radiation and chemical toxicity. I'd be looking at, does he have enough iodine in his diet, or does he have too much iodine in his diet, which is creating an antibody reaction? I would look at sources of bromine and fluoride. You know, is he drinking fluoridated water? If so, stop. Is he going in a hot tub or swimming pool that's instead of chlorine or chlorine that's heavily chlorinated or brominated? I would stop that. If he's eating bread, not only you have a double whammy there, triple, quadruple, huge number of hits with if he's eating bread. Number one, it's gluten, and gluten cross-reacts. And anybody with TPO antibodies has to get off of gluten. If he's eating bread, there's bromine as a dough conditioner in there. Bromine is antagonistic to the thyroid. It's antagonistic to iodine, which is important for the thyroid. Okay, plus the bread, it would be refined food that is going to cause blood sugar spikes and falls, and that's really critical for thyroid. So in a nutshell, you know, I'm just kind of in a nutshell condensing down, 4 hours or 6 hours, I think we did 6 hours of thyroid presentation into that. But the best thing you could do is that from Shine, it's a paper that shows a chart of all the different things and a lot of the different nutrients. And clean up his diet, clean up his gut, get him on good nutrition and antioxidants to support his immune system. Wow, that's intense. 12 years old, holy cow. And first of all, it's rare in boys, and it's rare in somebody that age, really rare. Okay, so Tina, a client friend is having digestive issues. I'm working with a traditional GI doc. She has blood and stool and gas, feels pain in stomach with all food, has eliminated certain foods, but never done it right as far as I'm concerned. She started probiotic in a green drink made by Garden of Life. Then the doctor put her on Prilosec. Oh, no. Yesterday, she told me her gynecologist discovered her problem is her gallbladder, and she's scheduled to have it removed. These people are, they're chasing symptoms. Yikes, is there anything you would suggest? It's a long shot with this person, but I'm hopeful that something will sink in. Apparently pain is by the gallbladder, and she says it's full of sludge. Oh my goodness. You guys are full of really challenging cases today. First of all, they put her on Prilosec that's going to shut down her digestion. If she has blood in the stool and gas, have they looked for ulcerative colitis or Crohn's? Is the blood in the stool bright red? Or is it occult blood, meaning it's hidden blood that you don't actually see coming out on the toilet paper or in the toilet bowl, but it's black and they've done it via doing a guaiac test? If they she has blood in her stool and it's occult blood, meaning it's older, it's probably from further up in the digestive tract, like coming from the stomach. So putting her on Prilosec is just shutting down her digestion in the stomach. If it's bright red blood, then they need to be looking for a source of that. First and obvious is hemorrhoids or fissures. You know, those are easy to rule out. Doctors have to go in and do an exam, and you'll see whether there's a hemorrhoid or a fissure. If not, then we're suspicious about an inflammatory bowel disease. Okay? When she has pain, you say pain in her stomach with all food. Do you really mean in her stomach, or are you talking in her digestive tract? A lot of people will say, I have stomach pain, and then they point to their lower gut. Crohn's is an inflammatory condition that can happen throughout the GI tract, and ulcerative colitis usually only happens in the lower part. So those are the things that she needs to be looking at as far as gallbladder. If this person is open to things, then you can certainly chat with them about helping, first of all, looking at their diet, right? That's the biggest piece. I have worked with people with gallbladders full of sludge. As long as they don't have a big old stone that's stuck in the common bile duct, there are some things. Shankha Piedra is an herb that's often used to break down those stones. Digestive enzymes, high doses on in between meals. You do have to be careful of that, because if she does have some sort of ulcer, it might bother her. So I would start with one on an empty stomach, and then two, and then three, and get up to as many as you can, because those can actually go in and break down that sludge. There's liver gallbladder flushes, which I wouldn't even think about going into unless you have serious experience with that. I know Jane. Jane is extremely experienced with that. She does a lot of those, so she might be a good source for you to talk to about doing something like that. But I think that's a long shot. So, yeah, there's a lot that they could do. And I would say, you know what, I've gotten the best results with gallbladder attacks with people is putting them on a fast or just juice, no solid foods, not even smoothies, for several days, like 3 to 5 days. And that just calms everything down. And then if you're doing that while you're doing some of these enzymes things in the Chakra Piedra, that could help. So ask your person, are you willing to, you know, do a few things and maybe put the gallbladder surgery off? Okay? So that's just a few things. Again, trying to cram a whole digestive module, which is many hours long, into a short thing. The more you understand, though, how all these things work and fit together, the more you hear these protocols and you just want to cringe because they're just so far off the mark. Steph says, and this is in response to something that Ghislaine said about her kefir, that sometimes the fresh young coconuts have bacteria in them that makes it thick. So that's a good point. And then Steph also asks about neurotransmitter testing. Is there a lab where a client can get that done? We can go to the naturopath here if need to, but I would love to have a comparison. Thank you so much. How reliable do you think the urine tests are? First of all, I rarely do neurotransmitter testing because I just don't think they are that reliable. There's a couple of bodies of thought and research on these. Most people don't think they're very reliable. There is a body, neurosciences does them. They are good, I think, in testing after you've started checking and supplementing somebody to see what you're doing with them. But because neurotransmitters, especially serotonin and dopamine, majority of them are produced not in your brain but in your gut, you don't really know what you're testing. And I've seen people who have come in with those tests, and I think I ran one or two of them myself, but they get so discouraged by the results because they're run by a company that then sells the supplements. And they don't talk about, well, this imbalance or that imbalance. They just kind of just say, oh, yeah, just put them on this supplement or that supplement. And it could be that the testing is okay, but the supplements that they're putting you on are not necessarily the best, because I've seen disparity in that. But I just generally don't do it. What I'd rather see you do, if you want to see where there are with neurotransmitters, is do a functional test. You know, testing the neurotransmitters in the urine is not as much of a functional test as something like an organic acid test, because the organic acid test actually tests for intermediates of the variety of metabolic pathways. And if you see buildups of certain chemicals in there and you look at the pathways, you can see where the blockages may be. And so Metametrics, and also, which is also Genova, same company, and also Great Plains has a pretty good organic acid test. That's how I like to look at it. This is a drug rehab withdrawal, and I'm going to recommend a gut rebuilding and amino acid supplementation protocol at the same time. But I'd love to be able to test him for neurotransmitter levels as he moves forward so that we could see how things are progressing. This is one of those things I would refer to. And I just don't think that there's anybody that really, really gets how to read those. If you look at somebody like Dan Kalish, he talks about how he doesn't believe that those tests, and Dr. Mark, no, no, not Mark, Hines, Dr. Hines, I forget his first name, but he disputes it. And then the people over at Neuroscience love it. So I think there's a place for it, but I'm not sure in this drug rehab. I would be looking, I'd rather look at amino acids and the organic acids. That's my humble opinion on that. Okay. Let's see. Okay, so Rick Meany says she's eating gluten and has had antibiotics as well. So I said get her off of gluten. She's got to get off of gluten. And then probiotics in an implantation type doses, which means that you want to have high levels. Rukmini says, regarding the boy, I thought it might be Hashimoto's. We'll check the Shine videos, and yes, we'll get him glutathione. And I ordered Apex for my other client with alopecia areata, but when should it be applied and how often? Should he continue to take his medications? So I'll get him off the top 6 allergenic foods. Yeah, I mean, it depends on what medication he's on. I mean, I would hope that the medication he's on is going to be thyroid replacement, because this is a case where he needs to be on thyroid hormone desperately while you're fixing the underlying problem. People with just borderline levels or a little bit high antibodies or a little bit high TSH, you can oftentimes manipulate and work with the foods. But at that level, he's at danger of his metabolic rate on a cellular level, just not supporting him. So the medication, absolutely, if he's on that. If he's on steroids, I'm not sure that that's such a good thing. But, again, you're dealing with the medical system, so you can't tell him to get off of them. So without knowing what medications he's on, hard to say. But if it is thyroid replacement, absolutely, he should be on it. I probably would put him on, you know, something like Armour, although he might be better off with synthetic and bioidentical, so being able to manipulate the levels of T3 and T4 to get them into a decent range. It sounds like his thyroid is completely shut down, and it needs to be rebooted, and hopefully it can, given his young age. Wow, that's a tough case. Okay, so Cassandra has a question on the phone, so I'll get to you. I'm going to do this last one that I typed in, and then we'll go on the phone. So Karen says, how can I help a 54-year-old male lose weight? He's lost some weight now but reached a plateau. He's eliminated gluten and is eating clean. He walks 4 to 5 miles a day and swims regularly, but he's on statin drugs and beta blockers. So there's some metabolic imbalance there. I would be looking at blood sugar, big time blood sugar, especially since you tell me he's on statin drugs and beta blockers. It says that cardiovascular system has been stressed. And oftentimes people will go off of gluten and they are on what looks like a good diet, but they're eating too much fruit for themselves, or they're eating grains, even whole grains. Non-gluten grains can be problematic. So I would have this guy get a blood sugar meter and start testing his blood sugar. Okay, so let's look at... All right, so let's look. So we have Cassandra. And then after Cassandra, we have wireless caller in Modesto, California. So let's go with Cassandra first. Hello.
Hi, Dr. Rita Marie. I have a couple questions.
Sure.
One is, I have a client who's she's got hypothyroidism. Her cholesterol is 265. Her cholesterol has been high for, she says, the last 3 years, and her doctors want to put her on statins, but she does not want to go on statins. Her triglycerides are 106. Her HDL is 71, and her LDL is 177. And her glucose is like 98. But I was wondering, what are some things nutritionally that I can recommend to help her with the cholesterol?
Yeah, so good question. So, again, let's just say going back to the basics and making sure that 98 is a high fasting blood glucose, as you know from being in the IRSPT program. So I would probably have her get herself a glucose meter. I would make sure that there's not also an underlying thyroid problem that's contributing, because low thyroid will contribute to high cholesterol.
Okay.
I would look at her digestion for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Things like CoQ10 can be very helpful. But a lot of those folks are just eating too much refined food, and that's contributing. So her fasting sugar's not out of the normal range, but 98, that's like just below what would be clinically considered insulin resistance. And you know that, you know, anything above 90 puts them at heart cardiovascular risk. So those are the things I would start with. And omega-3s, for sure, that will help with the fatty acid balance between the HDL and the LDL. HDL triglyceride ratio is not that bad, but it still makes me suspicious. Just the other stuff makes me suspicious of the blood sugar being out of whack. You can also run a hemoglobin A1C to see what it's been over the last 3 months.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Yeah, and I had told her about that to her. Her doctor's like, "What? Why do you need all these labs?" So her doctor was kind of resistant because I said an A1C, but she has been changing that. I did a cleanse with her. She's eating, and she was eating a lot of sugary foods, and she was drinking a lot. So I know that's
a big one. Yeah, the alcohol is huge.
Absolutely. And so she has cut down a lot on that, is feeling better. And she's totally got off gluten because she does, for her, is a thyroid. And she's actually mostly all of the six things, like the gluten, the soy, I think she still might do eggs, the peanuts, the sugar, the dairy. She's basically eliminated. So she kind of had this test right after she did the cleanse. So I'll continue to do this and do probably the glucose monitor and the stuff that you suggested.
And then retest her in 3 months, because if it was right after the cleanse, it could be too. Actually, right after a cleanse, oftentimes the cholesterol is higher because you're in fat burning mode and your body's releasing a lot of that. So oftentimes, I once did, it freaked me out. I had just done a 3-day water fast, and I went to get my cholesterol tested. This was ages ago, years ago. And my test result came back with my cholesterol. It was like 250. I'm like, wait a minute. I just got off of a fast, and I, you know, a few months ago did a longer fast. How could I possibly have a cholesterol? Well, then I started researching, and once you get beyond, like, say, you know, 24 hours of fasting, then your numbers, you can't trust your lipid numbers.
Okay, good. That's good to know. And then one other question. I was presenting this past, Saturday night, and so the question came up because I was talking about coconut oil and the benefits of coconut oil. And then one of the people there was just like, well, have you read about the China study, which I had? And they're like, and they say zero cholesterol, zero oil, and what's your, you know, take on that? And I was able to answer. It was like, so I was wondering, like, what is your take on that, you know, about the China study and how they and then I went even after that to further investigate, because I've kind of read it, but I was, you know, looking up different videos on it. And then another lady there was talking about, she's like, yeah, it's so confusing. Some people say take oil, some people say, you know, don't.
So tell you my take is, I'm a big fan of whole foods.
Mm-hmm.
So the same way I don't believe in taking, you know, refined flour or just bran, let's just put it that way, because the refined flour is you're leaving behind the nutrients, but you say you take the bran and the germ, I'd rather see somebody eat a whole food rather than even just when you extract out the most nutritious parts of the food. But with fats, it's a little bit different, because it's not just like you're taking out the most nutritious parts, you're leaving behind the protein and the carb. So I'm a big fan of eating whole coconut. And I'm a big fan of eating whole olives and eating whole flax seeds. But I'm not a big fan of oils, and I actually don't do all that much of it myself. I did get into a bad habit of doing some oils over the last few weeks because I did a cleanse, and I didn't want to go back to eating anything heavy. I wanted to keep my digestive tract light, so I did some coconut oil because I know how easy that is to digest. So therapeutically, I think, like when somebody has impaired digestion, they're going to do better on coconut oil than they are on the whole coconut, because they have to be able to then extract the oil away from the food, versus when you give them just therapeutic doses of whole coconut oil, it gets right into the system. It doesn't even require bile. The MCTs in that can just shoot right into the bloodstream and provide a good energy source. So therapeutically, I'm a big fan of it. But from a culinary standpoint, I'm a big fan of using whole foods as much as possible. But given that, right, say somebody has Alzheimer's, and you've read all the research about Alzheimer's and coconut oil and how well it works, well, to get them to get the amount of coconut oil that's therapeutically significant, maybe they'd be like bloated from all that coconut, you know? It's a lot of coconut. Not even I can, you know, it's just hard, right? So it's therapeutically sound. But I'm a big fan of, let's get people eating whole foods. And I think, you know, oils are refined foods, no doubt about
it. Right. Right. Okay. All right. Well, thank you so much. That's
you're
helpful.
Welcome.
Thanks.
Yeah, great. Super. And keep on talking to people. It's great. Wonderful. So, okay, I'm going to go to our wireless caller in Modesto, whoever that might be. Hello, wireless caller in Modesto.
It's Jane.
Oh, it's Jane. Great. Okay.
And I'm not in Modesto.
Okay. No, it's like Ghislaine wasn't in Bakersfield either, so it's who knows.
Mine was just a comment and just your thoughts on when you were talking about gallbladder stuff and acute gallbladder issues. That I've heard with acute gallbladder issues, if you really think you've got something kind of stuck in the ducts, is actually doing a couple of doses of Epsom salt mixture. What's your thought on that?
Oh, you know, that's used a lot in some of the protocols. I don't know if you use it in yours, but it's used in some of the gallbladder flush protocols.
I do use it in mine. But for an acute, I've also been told not doing the oil part of it, but just doing the Epsom salt just to kind of relax those ducts and open them up a little bit more.
I would think that, you know, anytime you're going to flood the system with magnesium like that, and you're in something where the concern is spasm, right? That's why we don't eat anything. We just kind of put people on liquids when they're having an acute gallbladder episode. So there's no risk of getting some contraction as a result of, you know, you're trying to squirt out bile. Right? So it's the same idea. I would think that that could be very helpful. I like that idea.
Yeah. I've actually done it once or twice, and it's worked. Sometimes it works, and sometimes it doesn't. And if it doesn't work, chances are it's probably not a gallbladder issue.
Yeah. I wonder if taking, like, a liquid ionic magnesium could do just as well, because people sometimes find
I don't know.
Epsom to be so lack of not palatable. But let's just say that and put it nicely. Yes, I wonder if that would
help. Does it react as fast?
Well, if it's ionic, right, and it's, or the pico particle size that Carolyn Dean has, I don't know. It may not be the quantity, and it may be something else that magnesium's, I don't know. It's a great question to ponder.
I'm gonna try it.
Yeah, but it makes sense, right, because magnesium can get in there and just calm everything down.
Mm-hmm. Great. Yeah. That's all I have.
Yeah, great. Wonderful. Thank you. All right. So I don't see any other hands up. So if anybody else has a question, you can put your hand up. And then if not, I'm going to go to the Q&A, and I'll refresh. Steph says, this is so helpful. Thank you. We'll do organic acids. I just have to do a lot of studying. Thanks so much. Yay. If you go to... Boy, we don't have any of those materials up. It's almost like we need to put up the whole course in advance and then tell you to go there or the other place. But there's just so much, and we don't overwhelm you. In the CAT program, which I don't think we have moved over to the new site, there's a whole section on organic acids. But if you go to, I think, Metametrics and Genova, whichever one site you can find access to, and look for their interpretation guides. They have some really good diagrams. Yes, it is. It's Genova. They have really good diagrams in there about all the different pathways. So if you're inclined to sit there with metabolic pathways and look at them and try to understand them, that would be great. Plus, I've never done the organics with Metametrics, but Great Plains is who I've been doing mine through just because they're a few dollars cheaper, and they give you a consult with their person over there. So if you run the test, they will oftentimes consult. And even if the thing about Great Plains is that the client can order it directly. Now, you're in Canada, so I don't know how this works, but you just call them up and say, hey, I'd like to send some clients there, and will you consult with us when the results get back? And I've had some good results with consulting with them over there. So Rukmini says, with the boy, how long does he have to be off the 6 allergens? Would it be until his tests are normal or up to 2 years? Well, given how abnormal his tests are, it could be a while. And so I would say he's got to be off of them for at least 6 months, possibly up to 2 years. But then, you can add some of them back. Personally, I don't think very many of those are good things to have anyway, right? Gluten? Forever. If he has had Hashimoto's, he's off forever. He probably has the genetics, and you can always test for that, but I would say forever. Dairy, I just don't think dairy cross-reacts with gluten. It's mucus-forming. I don't think it's generally a good source of food, and especially for the average person who's uninformed, they're not eating organic, raw, cultured dairy from a non-cow. If you're going to eat dairy, that's my opinion. Cultured, organic, raw, and from an animal other than a cow. Okay, so, and then, eggs, a lot of folks have allergic reactions to eggs because we're immunized, and part of the immunization is egg albumin. So we develop that allergy, and even if it's a subtle allergy, it can come back. So I would say, a long time, the peanuts, nobody should be eating peanuts on a regular basis because they're very inflammatory, and they're full of aflatoxin, and that can cross-react. And then corn, most of it's GMO. So if he's doing organic sprouted corn, they have organic sprouted corn tortillas at our local store, that might be okay. But it would be like after he's been off of it, gotten everything under control, and then gradually adds it back in. So, yeah, the same thing for your alopecia client. Kiran? Oh, yeah, we talked about that one. Okay, let me see. Refresh. We're done. Well, good. Let me just check one more time to see if there's anybody on the line. And I think we have another call after this for our consumer version. We have them on the same day for some reason. So we have another call at 3:30. So that'll give me a break in my voice for 20 minutes. So let me see if there's any others on the line. And if not, then we'll go ahead and – oh, we have two. We have I don't know if I put your hand down, Jane, but your hand is still up. So if you have another question, go for it. And then we have Tony.
No other question.
Okay, great. Thanks. I sometimes forget to put the hands down, and then I leave the screen and come back and don't realize it. So there we go. We have Miss Tony. Hello.
Hello again. This is kind of a follow-up question regarding my lovely client with the digestive issues. I know you recommended bitters and zinc. And given that, she has just that deep digestive issues, and even if she reduces or eliminates the foods that I know are causing it, I still wanted to get relief pretty easily or fast. Would you recommend like the bitters in the liquid form as well as the zinc in the liquid form?
Yes, absolutely. The bitters should be a liquid form. I like the bitters like Herbalist and Alchemist, but I think that Gaia and some other companies have them as well. I just particularly like the way he formulates, so I use his. And you would have her put it a dropper full in her mouth, under her tongue, and hold it for at least a minute. Now, people complain if there are these people who are real picky about the taste of things. They'll say, well, can I put some stevia in it to make it taste better? The answer is what? No, because you have to taste the bitter, and it's the bitter taste
exactly.
that stimulates the reflex, right?
Exactly.
So if they don't want to get that, they can also juice some dandelion or just chew on some dandelion leaves and just hold it in their mouth for a couple of minutes. But it should be about 15 minutes, 10 to 15 minutes before their meal.
And then obviously I want to move her from that to whole food, like dandelion greens and all that, which I chew on a regular basis, by the way. I find it very helpful.
Yeah. It could be. It doesn't have to be a bitters formula, but people find it easier to carry a little bottle in their purse so that when they go out, they, you know, while they're ordering, they pop it in, and then by the time the food comes, it's there. They don't feel
okay.
so comfortable, you know, relying on the restaurant to have dandelion greens or
right?
something.
How about that?
Or carrying them in their purse. So speak
okay,
a little bit
well,
off.
I will tell her to suck up the bitter and do what's right. So she's very willing to make changes. So this will be easy to set.
That won't be hard
for very much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the other thing you can do is a hydrochloric acid challenge. And if you don't know what that is, just do a Google search on HCL challenge. And
okay,
we
I'll
go through
that
more detail in the digestive module. But you basically checking with the HCL itself. The HCL taking it is great, and a lot of people do need it, but you want to do that in conjunction with the bitters. So if you're looking at getting pretty quick relief, oftentimes you can do that in conjunction with the bitters and the zinc so that you're helping your body create its own while you're giving it what it's missing. Same thing like I had said to Rick Meany about her boy. I mean, there's no way you're going to wait long enough for all this natural stuff to kick in to get his antibody levels and his thyroid levels under control where it is now. You got to get in and do the medication. But the mistake that medicine makes is just doing the medication and not addressing the underlying cause. So I want you to be different. I want you to give him some symptom relief, but address the underlying cause at the same time.
Sounds good.
Okay.
All right. That was very helpful. Thank you.
Great. You're welcome. Mm-hmm. Right. So I think that's it. I'll check one last time, and then I will take a break. And there's no more questions in. So, guys, it's been awesome. Thank you so much for being here, and we will talk to you again. I think our next call is probably next week for those of you in NEPT, and I think that's who most of you on the call to us today. Let's see. Oh, I think it's the week after. Yeah, but do join me for the various teleseminars, webinars we're doing. We're gonna, if you really want to get into more detail on thyroid testing, I'm going to be doing that tonight on my three mistakes that people, busy, hardcore health seekers make. I'll go into it more detail. Not as much as we'll go into when we get our, you know, six-hour thyroid module later on in the course, but we definitely will get into, you know, some good testing and stuff for you tonight. On tonight's call. Good stuff. All right? So, goodbye, everybody. Have a great rest of the day, and we'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
The moderator has left the conference.